With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Monday, November 27th. Coming up in today's show, we have a special feature with the Ag Secretary, Sunny Perdue. That's coming up in a little bit, but we start this morning with Taylor Hillman.
California continues to increase its area-wide treatments for Asian citrus psyllids. Area Task Force coordinate with growers to treat at the same time. Research entomologist Beth Grafton Cardwell says those groups are still fine-tuning their timings to make the most impact against the pest. She also believes in heavy areas that growers would benefit greatly from doing an additional spray on their own in areas of the grove the insects favor the most.
Right. Most of the area-wide programs are treating two times a year in a coordinated fashion and then kind of letting growers do grower choice the rest of the year. And what I'm thinking is because the animal likes to be on the borders of orchards, that sometimes the coordinated area-wide treatment isn't quite the right timing for your orchard. The psyllids are already increasing, and that might be a really good time to jump in there and do a border treatment and knock the population down and then do the area-wide treatment.
I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
USDA's latest efforts to promote reduced use of a popular pesticide includes proposals for environmentally friendly alternatives. Stephanie Ho reports.
USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture has announced nearly $2 million in funding available to research environmentally friendly replacements for methyl bromide, which depletes the ozone layer.
Methyl bromide itself is really powerful as a pesticide. It can kill insects, it can kill fungi, it can kill bacteria, it can kill nematodes. So as a fumigant, it works really, really well.
NIFA Director Sunny Ramaswamy says the chemical has been popular because it is cheap and effective and dissipates quickly.
Because it's so simple, it can volatilize pretty easily, become a gas pretty easily.
NIFA's methyl bromide transition program has been working for years to try to wean farmers away from the chemical. Some alternatives include efforts to aerosolize traditional insecticides so that it gets into the nooks and crannies where the target bugs are often hiding. The deadline for applications for the latest proposal is January 30th, 2018. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
USDA offers economic analysis of transportation of farm goods available to growers, shippers, and other stakeholders in the ag value chain. Rod Bain has more.
Some may not realize USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service also looks into and reports on the economics of farm-to-market transportation. Bruce Blatton of AMS's Transportation Services says an example of this work is its weekly grain transportation report, used by stakeholders from growers and shippers to policymakers.
It provides data on the major modes of transportation for the movement of agricultural products, information such as barge rates, truck rates, rail rates, ocean shipping rates, tonnages that are moving, what's going on in the major export corridors and that kind of thing.
AMS also partners with land-grant universities to study ag transport issues, such as the focus of a recent University of Tennessee analysis.
We had them explore what would happen if a lock on the upper Mississippi were to close. What would be the impacts to the corn and soybean producers? That study found that the impacts could be over $2 billion for a closure that was up to a year.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Building relationships leads to consistency in cattle production. Today we meet Todd Wilkinson of DeSmit, South Dakota. He and his two brothers finish cattle in quarter-mile-long monoslope buildings in an area once dubbed Poverty Flats. He tells us how relationships make the business successful.
Cattle feeder Todd Wilkinson has a specific animal type in mind when he fills his pens. It's based on what he wants to market to the packer.
I buy probably 90% of our cattle right off the ranch. So I'm looking for an animal that's going to perform, that's going to have the ability to let me hit the April market, for instance, with that fall calf that I'm going to pick up here in just a few weeks. And I'm looking for an animal that's got great genetics that can make me hit a premium. I need to hit that choice and prime in the CABs because that's the program our operation is in.
The easiest way to get those kind of cattle in his yard is to work on repeat suppliers.
We've had relationship with ranchers for many, many years. And because of that, I know the genetics. They know our shot protocol. So we know with our ranchers, we work out a program as to what preconditioning program they're going to have. and then what we expect out of the delivery, and then all the way into the background yards where we go through the same protocols. We try to keep consistent so we can keep our product consistent.
The family works with 9 backgrounding yards to get the calves ready for the feed yard, and they track them all the way through. Final carcass and performance data is shared back with the producers.
It's one of the reasons that a lot of ranchers like to do business with our operation is because they can determine if their bull power needs to be adjusted, if their calves aren't what we're looking for. So they're looking for that feedback to build their herd. And when they improve their herd, they're improving our finished product. So it's kind of a synergy there, works very well between our operation and a lot of the ranchers.
That teamwork improves the cattle and those relationships.
A lot of them really want to know because they never get to hear it. You know, they take and sell that animal, they don't know what happens. And they'd like to know what their efficiencies are, what the rate of gain is, just how that animal's performing.
Everybody is more profitable when everybody has their eye on the end goal. I'm Bob Cervera.
If you are the Capital Christmas tree, you of course have your own online presence. Stephanie Ho has more.
What's one secret for attracting support from the private sector?
I think in part because of our success with social media, we're finding more and more companies interested in partnering with us on this effort. So as an example, the trucking industry is very involved.
That was Bruce Ward, whose nonprofit group, Choose Outdoors, works with the U.S. Forest Service to find private sponsors to help bring the Capital Christmas tree to Washington, D.C.
We assist through the social media and traditional media categories by having a professional photographer, videographer with us.
The tree, an Engelmann spruce from the Kootenai National Forest in the far northwestern corner of Montana, is heading east on a flatbed truck, with planned stops in communities along the way. If you want to see the tree online, some websites to check out are trackthetreeoneword.com or Capital Christmas Tree with an O in capital.com. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
When it comes to a healthy bottom line for your farming operation, nothing helps like healthy soil. Producers who use soil health management systems report lower input costs while maintaining or even improving their yields. Plus, those systems help with drought protection and soil and water conservation. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out more and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
Control weeds from the start with the proven long-lasting power of Chateau Herbicide SW. Chateau controls more than 90 annual broadleaf and grass weeds in orchards and vineyards, including marestail, fleabane, mallow, and more. Unlike the competition, Chateau can be applied to non-bearing orchards and vineyards after planting for early protection. Take control and keep control of tough weeds with Chateau Herbicide. To learn more, talk to your PCA or visit valet.com/chateau. Always read and follow label instructions.
As an almond grower, you work hard all day right from the crack of dawn. You love your crop, your land, and those who helped you raise it. Join Almond Board of California at the Sacramento Convention Center from December 5th through the 7th to learn how your operation can thrive. Hear from industry experts on new innovations and research, and connect with more than 270 exhibitors on the trade show floor and see their products firsthand. You care about your legacy, and the Almond Board does too. Go to almondconference.com to learn more and register.
You go the extra mile for your grapes, citrus, and tree nuts. Does your herbicide? Allion Pre-Emergence Herbicide goes the distance, delivering up to 6 months of powerful residual control of grass and broadleaf weeds, including resistant species. With Allion, you reduce the number of in-season sprays, so you can focus less on weeds and more on profitability. Cleaner, longer. Allion Herbicide from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle. Or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says most field work is winding down in the Midwest.
Now, we did have some heavy rain in the eastern Corn Belt, which continues to hamper late season harvest efforts in states like Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio.
He says this is showing up in the nationwide numbers.
Corn harvest, U.S. total number, 90% complete. That is 5 percentage points behind the 5-year average, and 6 percentage points behind where we were at this time a year ago.
He says the states with heavy rain saw the most significant harvest delays.
And then we have some lingering delays in a few other areas, such as North Dakota, and then stretching back to Colorado, and also eastward into Pennsylvania.
He says all those states are at least 5 percentage points behind schedule. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, the 11 remaining members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, recently announced plans to move forward with a modified trade agreement. And according to a story from Joe Sheely with U.S. Meat Export Federation, that new agreement heightens concerns about market access for U.S. beef and pork in Japan.
In this U.S. Meat Export Federation report, USMEF economist Aaron Bohr explains that the biggest concern for U.S. beef and pork is on market access to Japan.
Let's talk about beef first. Japan is obviously our largest export market, and we pay higher tariffs in Japan than any other significant market. So we had the most to gain, and we have the most at stake, as we see Australia, Mexico, and Chile already benefiting from lower tariffs through their respective partnership agreements with Japan, and they will see tariffs further reduced under this modified TPP agreement. Today, Australia's tariff is 27.2% on frozen beef. For chilled, it's just under 30%. U.S. beef is paying 38.5% on chilled, and today 50% on frozen because of the safeguard. With TPP, the reductions are front-loaded, so immediately tariffs will be reduced to at least what Australia is paying and then phased down to 9% over 15 years. And the safeguard mechanism, which Japan maintains on a quarterly basis, would be switched into an annual safeguard, which has very low likelihood of being triggered.
Competitors of U.S. pork gain not only through TPP, but also through the upcoming agreement between Japan and the European Union.
For Japan, on the pork side, tariffs are eliminated on processed pork products. That market has never been opened in any existing bilaterals, so it's a huge breakthrough. Canada is, in a sense, our biggest competitor in that we supply similar products into the Japanese market. They're by far our biggest competitor on chilled pork. Mexico and Chile already have reduced tariffs through their respective agreements, but further gains for them. And importantly, similar terms are included in Europe's bilateral with Japan. And so once again, U.S. pork will be the only significant supplier to Japan that will not be seeing these tariff reductions.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And last week, Executive Director of the Public Lands Council and National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Federal Lands, Ethan Lane, released a statement in response to the U.S. Forest Service's notice of intent to prepare an environmental impact statement on greater sage-grouse management plans. Lane said the announcement represents an important step towards correcting the flawed 2015 land use plan amendments for the greater sage-grouse. We are glad that the Forest Service has joined the Bureau of Land Management in recognizing that additional consideration and public comment are sorely needed before any further action is taken. He said emerging science has shown that, as written, the flawed amendments will inappropriately target proper grazing due to poorly structured habitat objective requirements found throughout the plans. Lane also noted PLC and NCBA look forward to working with the Department of Interior to correct the 2015 land use plan amendments. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Well, you can look for your bottle of wine or grape juice to cost you more in the near future now. Yes, because of those California wildfires. What you've seen and read about was mostly the loss of lives and property, as bad as any wildfire damage you're likely to see. But those same fires devastated the primary grape country of California. I have no idea how many wineries they have in California, but they have 17 fewer than before the fire struck. There's been no official account of damage to vineyards, but it was severe. Those orchards will have to be replanted and given a couple of years before full production is restored. Meanwhile, the article I read said, expect prices to rise, wine and juice, and not just this year, but next year too. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Agnet West.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. We continue now with listening to Max Armstrong talking with Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue. It was a special session at the 2017 NAFB convention, which I attended earlier this month in Kansas City. Here again, Max Armstrong and Sonny Perdue.
Well, let's take some questions from our members. I see my longtime colleague, Mr. Samuelson, back here. 40 years we've worked together. Let's get a microphone to Orion.
I missed that rookie back there. He was hiding.
Yeah. I just want to make sure you knew that he was here.
I didn't see him there.
I'm back here, Mr. Secretary.
Have you told everybody my new name for you? Harry Carey of Farm Broadcasting there.
That's a compliment.
Yes, it is.
In light of trade agreements, do you think the future of agricultural trade agreements will be bilateral rather than multilateral?
I think certainly during this administration they will. The president has specifically noted that. He believes that he can negotiate better one-on-one than as a group, such as TPP or TTIP in that area. And I think, but I also think these other countries, frankly, are looking at our progress on NAFTA and seeing how the Canadian and Mexico agreement works in order to engage with us. I'm pretty frustrated about the EU, and I was pretty candid with them when I was there a few weeks ago, excuse me, regarding their protectionism. They hide behind a lot of things, food safety, engineering, GMOs, and all those kind of things, but it's nothing more than a clouded protectionism for the EU. And that's particularly frustrating when their ministers, as Secretary Block knows, will come and speak the right language and want to do deals individually, and yet they run back under the umbrella of the EU. It's very frustrating. So we talked candidly about that. We've negotiated very, very hard with China. I frankly don't think China has done many of the things they've committed to do. We were successful in getting beef back in this summer, but that had been a long time coming as well. We've got poultry out there. They've done their audits and all that. I think we've got to become, really like President Trump says. I think that's what he's saying, pretty direct. And we've kind of been the global patsy when it comes to trade over some things, over enforcement. So I don't think it will be a detriment on the rhetoric. And I think ultimately when we get NAFTA done, I think you'll see some other countries come in. The president is in China today on this really Indo-Pacific area. There are a lot of hungry mouths over there, aside from China, in Indonesia and Vietnam and Malaysia and those kind of countries. And we're making a big push in the Indo-Pacific region where he is this week.
Let's go back here to Bob Bosold, one of our good members. Western Wisconsin serves dairy country, Mr. Secretary.
And I guess that will tell you where my question is going to be focused, Mr. Secretary. Thank you for being here. Kind of a two-part question. As far as the dairy supply management program in Canada, how hard is that going to be to get negotiated out, if not impossible, based on the fact that Canadians go back to the original negotiation, say, well, you didn't make us do it in the original NAFTA agreement, so it's going to be impossible almost to get that out of there. Second question, Canada has initiated this Class 7 pricing program, and they've literally upset the apple cart all over the world as far as dairy, but especially here in the United States. What are you doing at USDA negotiating with the Canadians to get that taken off the books? Are they in any way, shape, or form going to talk about that with you? Or what can we tell our dairy farmers about Class 7 that has disrupted this market so badly?
Well, first of all, you know that our statutory negotiators, the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Lighthizer. And that is on the table. It's on the table specifically with not only milk and dairy, eggs and poultry as well. Your second part of your question would answer the first part. They hadn't done this manipulative Class 7 milk when we did the original NAFTA. And I think that's an absolute circumvention of the agreement. It's using a supply management system with quota and very high prices for their consumers to let them overproduce and then push the solids off on the world market. And that's just not right. And we will challenge them on that. And I don't know how, whether politically they can erode or move away from the supply management system they have now. And I told the Minister McCauley there, I said, you know, I don't necessarily need for you to remove your supply management system, but if you're going to have one, manage the supply so it doesn't depress world prices from solids, not only affecting us, but many other countries. And that's what I would expect. So there have got to be some changes in order to resolve the dairy issue with Canada. It wasn't just the 75 Wisconsin farmers, but it's been depressing world milk solid prices overall for other countries as well.
We are listening to U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue talking with Max Armstrong at the 2017 NAFB Convention. We will continue right after this.
When it comes to a healthy bottom line for your farming operation, nothing helps like healthy soil. Producers who use soil health management systems report lower input costs while maintaining or even improving their yields. Plus, those systems help with drought protection and soil and water conservation. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out more and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
Control weeds from the start with the proven long-lasting power of Chateau Herbicide SW. Chateau controls more than 90 annual broadleaf and grass weeds in orchards and vineyards, including marestail, fleabane, mallow, and more. Unlike the competition, Chateau can be applied to non-bearing orchards and vineyards after planting for early protection. Take control and keep control of tough weeds with Chateau Herbicide. To learn more, talk to your PCA or visit valent.com/chateau. Always read and follow label instructions.
As an almond grower, you work hard all day right from the crack of dawn. You love your crop, your land, and those who helped you raise it. Join Almond Board of California at the Sacramento Convention Center from December 5th through the 7th to learn how your operation can thrive. Hear from industry experts on new innovations and research, and connect with more than 270 exhibitors on the trade show floor and see their products firsthand. You care about your legacy, and the Almond Board does too. Go to almondconference.com to learn more and register.
You go the extra mile for your grapes, citrus, and tree nuts. Does your herbicide? Allion Pre-Emergence Herbicide goes the distance, delivering up to 6 months of powerful residual control of grass and broadleaf weeds, including resistant species. With Allion, you reduce the number of in-season sprays, so you can focus less on weeds and more on profitability. Cleaner, longer. Allion Herbicide from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We complete the show today once again with Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue speaking with Max Armstrong.
Let's go back over to the left over here. Jason, you have someone over there. Please identify yourselves as you stand up.
Mr. Secretary Don Molina with the Voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network. First of all, greetings from our Commissioner of Agriculture, Dr. Mike Strain. He says very nice things about you.
Yeah.
Two-part question.
Dr. Strain and I are tight.
No comment. Will the Trump administration push to keep the American sugar program intact? And second of all, will you push to get a cotton safety net program in the new farm bill?
Yeah. I think, again, sugar probably has not been first and foremost in the NAFTA negotiations. It's also stood aside. I think, frankly, that Secretary Ross and Our sugar negotiators did a very good job this past year with the parameters on Mexican sugar that some of our producers and processors had felt like were being dumped on the U.S. So I think the constraints that we got on the sugar negotiation this spring were very, very helpful. For the most part, both our beet growers and our cane producers are happy after the fact. You know, they're never happy, Secretary Block, until you do the deal, but after that, they say good job. But for the most part, the beet and the cane producers felt like it was a good deal on sugar. I don't think that will be a real issue in NAFTA negotiations. Second question was regarding, what was the second part? Safety net for cotton. Yeah, I think the Cotton Council and really the cotton producers are very interested in getting back in Title I. As you all know, after the WTO adjudication that went against cotton prior to the 14 Farm Bill, they were the ones that said, don't want to stick a finger back in Brazil's eye. Don't put us in Title I and let us try these other programs. Sadly, they've not turned out with the STAX program as successful as they had hoped. So I think you will see the committees, both on the House and Senate, look to get cotton back in Title I. Whether that means a separation of the lint and the seed, as they're asking, that can get fairly expensive. But we are convinced they hit us up with that early on, and my general counsel really concurred with previous opinions that USDA secretary did not have the statutory authority to make that decision of separating those two commodities in the lint and the seed. Same thing with dairy to some degree. Senator Stabenow was very anxious in us doing that for dairy with the cows and the milk. And while there probably will be a crop insurance program that deals with that, we didn't have the statutory authority to determine that as well. We're working on, another version of a cost gen sharing program this year, similar to what happened last year, to hopefully bridge us over into the 18 Farm Bill where the cotton issue can be, I think, corrected.
Mr. Hoffman, Dustin Hoffman from Minnesota.
Yes, Mr. Secretary. Just a couple weeks ago, USDA authorized some emergency funding to help farmers and ranchers in Minnesota to help combat the gray wolf problem up in northern Minnesota. And I know a lot of people are wondering, I know it's going to take congressional action to get the wolf delisted, but is there any more USDA can do to help support those initiatives to help the farmers? I mean, the funding is great and it's well appreciated, but it seems like they're fighting a losing battle against the wolf and the EPA right now.
My understanding is that we're doing virtually everything we can from an administrative perspective. In fact, I was telling the group out here in the booth that one of the groups that I was probably less familiar with was our Wildlife Services group, and they've got more accolades as I've gone across the country from Montana to Minnesota to Wisconsin over their efforts in the predator control. You know that we've got some challenges with the accident on M44s, and we've constrained that to some degree. Many people, producers, feel like that was a huge disadvantage, particularly in more populous areas where they don't feel that they can use them legally now. And the coyote population there, we know wolves are a totally different situation as well. But our Wildlife Services crowd is very popular. They're doing a good job. And from coyotes and other predation around the world, we were talking with the sheep and wool growers here as well about what a great job and what a good relationship they have. So I think we're doing everything we can now. Good luck on Congress on the wolf issue. Many people, it's that mythical thing, and they don't understand how ravaging wolves can be in a livestock population.
Another of our members who's reported on that quite often is Taylor Brown from Montana back here. Taylor, you have the mic?
Thank
Taylor
you very
can
much,
tell
Mac.
Us the answer there.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. It was a treat to have you in Montana for a couple of days in Great Falls in June. And some of those same guys you spent time with on those ranches are in China today. And that announcement that came out this week, the several hundred million dollars worth of beef to be sold to China. Have you had a chance to put that in perspective yet? Think what that exactly means. Was that what you were hoping for last June and the trips you made over there? And put that in perspective for us.
Well, it is. I kind of teased Greg Ibach that you Montana guys weren't letting Nebraska get ahead of them with branded Montana beef. So I think that's exactly what we were hoping. I think there's more opportunity on maybe some smaller scale type of small branding type of things. The Chinese, the people love U.S. products. They feel that they're convinced it's very safe. It's a matter of getting past governmental regulations. But I think really what we're going to see happen with electronic commerce, e-commerce, is that more and more smaller packers, producers of different processors, of different products, are going to find a global market through e-commerce, Alibaba, Amazon, and others worldwide, where they can ship their products. We've got to do it on that kind of scale, maybe than the major types of commodity movements that we've seen in the past. But congratulations to your Montana guys. That takes a lot of effort and a lot of moxie to do that.
Back against the wall at the very back is Greg Akagi.
Yes, Mr. Secretary, thank you for joining us today as well. My question to you is, have you spoke with Commerce Secretary Ross based on the reported comments that he made, if there is a pullout of NAFTA and the concerns of how much it would affect American agriculture, that he had labeled that as an empty threat?
Yeah, he said to tell y'all he was sorry. Good. Every trade meeting we have, which is almost every week at the White House, he hears that message, and I think it's sinking in.
Once again, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue and Max Armstrong. For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.